Welcome to the Wide for the Win podcast. Our goal at Wide for the Win is to help authors grow publishing success across multiple platforms and formats through education, training, support, and community. If you're interested in reaching readers around the world, diversifying your income as an author, and exploring the freedom of living a truly indie author life, you've come to the right place.
Song.
It's so nice. It's so nice. Yeah. I love the fact that it kind of warms people up. I'm like, okay, they're getting started. Let's settle in, get the popcorn, and let's see what verbal flubs Mark's gonna make this time around.
Or Susie. Yeah, let's not forget me. Oh my gosh, tripping over my own words all the time.
So how's it going, Susie? Susie and myself, Mark, are here to talk about managing your author expectations. If you have any comments, thoughts, suggestions, etc.
Just if you're watching live, yes, of course.
What's that?
If you're watching live, of course.
Yeah, well, there are people watching live. I can see that we have people watching live, so feel free. And I think Kristen writes a novel, says hi. Hello, Widelings.
As usual. Kristen being one of our most frequent watchers live.
And Kaylee says hi, everyone, and Susie and Mark. So hey, cool. All right. So what do we talk about when we're talking about managing expectations?
Well, personal story, not really. So if you pop into a big group like Wide for the Win, you see a lot of very successful authors paying forward advice that they've received, things they've learned, trying to help other authors. Managing your expectations, particularly if you're just starting out and you don't know what to expect yet, don't look at those super successful authors and expect yourself to be able to hit that immediately is one of the biggest ones. So setting yourself up for success by not expecting yourself to be successful right out of the gate is a big one. And that's probably one of the biggest, I would say.
And I think, I mean, a couple other things I want to say related to that, because often when people think about Wide and Wide for the Win, they think about Amazon versus everyone else. It's not Amazon versus everyone else. It's that Amazon is the biggest.
And
it's the biggest retailer in the world. Like when you think about it, it's the everything store. It's the largest one.
Yeah.
So it does have a huge share of many, many markets. And there are opportunities. There are opportunities to, sell on the other platforms, but it often takes longer. I remember when I worked at Kobo, I used to tell authors, it can take up to 9 months before you start to see the results of the work you're doing now. And a lot of authors will give up after, you know, the 90-day tour of duty, you know, that is sort of like, I'm going to give it a month or 2 months or 3 months. And you might have to give it longer. The other thing is, even when you're Wide, Amazon may still be a huge percentage of your sales. For example, I have mostly been always Wide with all my stuff, for an exception of when I was testing out exclusivity, because I needed to try it out and experiment with it, just because I think you can't say you don't like your vegetables unless you've tried them, certain foods. And, you know, Amazon, I think, it is anywhere from 60 to 40% of my ebook income on a monthly basis. So that's another expectation. And then the other thing I wanted to share was, I've worked in the industry long enough. I did work for Kobo for a number of years, and I also do work with Draft to Digital. So I have insight into, I look at a lot of data of sales from across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And most, I'm sorry, I hate to say this, this is true in traditional publishing. It's true in self-publishing. Most books do not sell a lot. Most authors publishing will be lucky if they sell a book this year. So, I know this sounds, it's a harsh thing to say. If you are at a certain level, let's say you're bringing in 3 figures a month, I'm like, you're already on the right track. You're going in the right direction. And you're trying to get to that next. You're trying to get the multiple 3 figures, or you're trying to get to the 4-figure level. You need to, and Paul Ardoin actually has a great book on this, on the 4-figure author, on how to get to that 4 figures a month. And again, it's a very realistic look at it. But the reality is not everyone's going to be hitting the 6-figure and the 7-figure author status. So a lot of authors, I feel, beat themselves up and have too many high expectations too early without giving it enough time.
Yeah. That's a huge deal. It's just understanding that the percentage, I mean, we hear a lot from the successful authors because they want to share their information, and we're grateful for that. That's how we all learn. But don't expect yourself to be able to get to that, especially right away. I mean, eventually, yeah, sure, you can build up to that. That's one of the great things about self-publishing is it's opened the door for a lot of authors who, for whatever reason, maybe they wrote, you know, genre-bending books that the author or the publishing world, traditional publishers, don't think are going to sell, and they end up taking off, you know, after they're published. There's a lot of opportunity out there, and there's a lot of hard work that you're going to have to do to get there. But yeah, I mean, if you're selling three figures a month, even, or even, you know, like upper two figures a month, you're doing pretty dang well. So don't look at somebody who's making, you know, five figures a month and thinking that you're not doing or you're failing, you know, because you're not, you're just not there, you know.
Or if you're making three figures or more a month on Amazon, but you're not, you're only making single digits or double digits on the other platforms, it may take some time to build that up. Should we add, Kristen posted a comment. I think that's worthwhile. Yeah. So I'll read it out loud for the audio audience. Kristen says, I published my first book in March. Sold my first book on Kobo over the summer and my second last month because I applied for every percentage off promo I can. Slow going, but I'm thrilled every time I sell there. And the other thing, Kristen, and this is the other thing about the Kobo dashboard to be aware of, is the main growth Kobo's seen in the last 4 or 5 years has not been in a la carte sales, it's been in Kobo Plus. And it's really hard to measure Kobo Plus because the sales come in like a month and a half later, and it's not on the main dashboard. You have to toggle over. Because I look at it and I go, okay, my sales aren't doing much more than they were. They're just kind of stagnant. They're just kind of still doing what they've always done. The only growth I've personally seen is in the Kobo Plus numbers. And so when I toggle over there, it, like from 2 months back, I can go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the growth I'm seeing in Kobo Plus. And that's challenging when you're looking at your dashboard on a regular basis because you're like, well, I'm not doing much on Kobo. So I'm curious, Kristen, I mean, sold your first books on Kobo. That's fantastic. Are you also seeing any growth in Kobo Plus, which again is hard to see, hard to measure because you're looking at it so far behind.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? I'm actually really loving, and I know a lot of people have some concerns about the, you know, you don't get paid for that 30-day trial. Any of your books that a reader reads.
Oh, yeah, that first month. Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? So I'm like, I haven't released a book in 7 years. I think anybody who's been paying attention already knows that. But here's the thing where I almost seven in February, it'll be 7 years. Yeah. Anyhow, so I have very stale books that have been out for a long time. And I, so I'm not going to see a ton of growth right now. But the thing I've noticed about Kobo Plus for me is it's steady. Like I can count on a very steady income from Kobo Plus that my sales, you know, sales are very much peaks and valleys, but the Kobo Plus income is very steady.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
They're growing that audience. They have been. If you actually pay attention to the folks from the Kobo Writing Life team and what Kobo's putting out there is they're constantly doing Kobo Press promos because it's a really phenomenal program for it. It gives the benefits of the Kindle Unlimited reading without the exclusivity. So it's a really beneficial program, not just for readers, but also for publishers and for authors.
Yeah. And that's one of those things. So one of my expectations is I know that borrowed books or so subscription titles, whether that's, you know, for the people in KU or Kobo Plus, they're not going to pay as much as a full sale is going to. So I'm actually, instead of breaking down, you know, like how many minutes read, I'm actually just looking at the grand total. I don't even break it down by book right now because, and that's one of my expectations because I cannot expect subscriptions to match sales. Or to behave like sales. And so for me, how I'm getting around that is just looking at the bulk number. And that's where my own little mind hacks.
Well, no, but those mind hacks are important because sometimes this is the other thing of expectations is we end up spending so much time focusing on our dashboards and looking at the dashboard on a daily basis. And I get it. When you're running promos, when you're running ads, stuff like that, you need to get that feedback in order to see how you're doing. But I know I probably would, you know, I know we'll be talking about this in the future weeks, but, you know, maybe my plan is to not look at the dashboard until I've gotten my work done, my new writing done, or the other things I need to do to move my business forward. Because just looking at that dashboard can be debilitating. You can be, so right now, for example, I'm pretty excited because I have a movie trivia books that do really well this time of year because they're mass market size stocking stuffers. Yeah. And it's not ebooks that are selling, it's all print. And so this is like, you know, from October through to December, I end up getting all distracted looking at my dashboard for way too long instead of just checking in once a day. Yeah. And I probably could get back a good solid hour, if not more, of proper work instead of going and hitting that stupid refresh button. Now, yep. Scribe Count makes it easy to be able to see all the places at once, which is way better because I'm not Amazon focused on it. I'm looking to see all of the things from all the platforms. Yep. So, but that is another, I think that's another expectation, is managing your own, what is it? I guess that the endorphin rush that we get.
Yes.
Or the dopamine, from the likes that we see on social media or from, ooh, my dashboard changed.
Yes. Oh, one sale or, ooh, one free download. Yeah, 12 years experience has taught me that it's fun, especially when you start, you know, like getting your first big, like my first book bub blew my mind. And so I was sitting there, I spent the entire day. Okay, so for like the first 10 book bubs.
But I mean, fortunately, you don't get a book bub every day. So that may be worth,
thankfully,
worth patting yourself on the back and getting excited about.
Yeah, it's managing those. I think, I see what drives me nuts. I wish Amazon would go to like a daily reporting like the rest everybody else has, where you can select a date and see how many sales you had on that one date. Amazon still does not have that, to my knowledge, at least not that I found in the new dashboard.
No, you can go. I can go in and under orders, I look at it so I can check. Yeah, you can check out. You can check whatever range you want. And the range can be a single day.
See, I like to check my numbers daily. So, like,
you just want to see yesterday's sales.
Yesterday's sales.
No, they always default. To this month. Yeah. I see what you mean.
I could check just yesterday's sales, and then I could do it at the end of the day. So if I'm trying to gauge the most accurate, you know, like a book bub goes out about 9 o'clock Eastern in the morning, right? So I want to know how many sales I had the day before that book bub hit, or, you know, sales or free downloads, whichever.
Right. Yeah.
I can't do that with Amazon. It drives me nuts. So I usually end up checking my sales first thing in the morning, which is not great because then it puts my brain in that whole admin part instead.
I need to get my writing done first before I do email or anything. And that can throw my day. Yeah.
So that's another expectation too to consider is, you know, expect that you need to get your work done first because you can't sell books you haven't written, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And expect that you're going to get distracted by the admin stuff. Yeah. Also, Kristen's smart. She only checks her dashboards once a week or two.
Yeah. Which is really, really cool. I like that. Okay. So on a similar, the same topic, but this is a topic specifically for those who write children's books.
Yeah.
So Angela says, expectations for children books are a whole different ball game.
Oh yes.
LOL. But here's why. They are going to be primarily print. So a lot of the tactics that authors use to get ebook sales are not going to work as well on print books.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a different market. Like when you're working with children's books, it's different because with an adult book, you're marketing to the person who's purchasing it, usually for themselves. When you're marketing children's books, you're marketing it to the people who will be buying the books for the children, typically, for the most part. Or you're doing that in-person marketing, because it's a very tactile experience. You're going to want to get the print book into libraries and stuff like that. Yes. And the other thing, Angela, that I just a strategy that's worked for me, when I know there are some of my books that do really, really well in print primarily. I don't have children's books, but I do have print, hot print books that don't do well in ebook. I will still run those 99-cent promos on the ebook, knowing full well that if it gets under the eyeballs of the right reader, they're not going to buy the ebook for 99 cents. They're going to buy the print book because that's the thing that's more appealing to them. So those kinds of promos get the eyeballs on them. And then that usually for that type of product, they're going to go, yeah, but I'll just buy the print book. So that's a strategy that could work.
Yeah. I have found some of my favorite authors because they ran a 99 cent deal on their ebook and it happened to go on a newsletter that I was subscribed to, like BookBub or Robin Reads or one of those. And I'm like, oh, cool, they have print too. And I grabbed the print book instead of the ebook because I prefer print. So that's a really good point. And nonfiction too is its whole ball game as well. And middle grade, more so even than YA. It's like the older the person gets, you know, from childhood on, it's like you start to gradate into ebook.
And nonfiction. Yeah. I mean, I like to have the physical copies for nonfiction so I can easily reference something later.
Yeah.
And so I can highlight it. I may even just listen to the audiobook. So I may get the audiobook and or the ebook and read them that way, but then have the physical, physical copy.
Multiple editions,
So that's the other appeal, right? Is running those price promos, knowing that the end result is, well, they're going to buy the physical. And that's the other thing I think managing your expectations is we've been trained in the indie author community that traditional publishers overprice their ebooks because they're trying to drive you to buy the expensive hardcover and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we try to stand out by being cheaper, by being a better price. That's not necessarily the way to play the print book game. Yeah, you don't want to be ridiculously high with the cost, but you need to make some margin. Like when I sell a $5 ebook, I'm making 70% of that, right? Mm-hmm. Or more if I'm selling it directly, and I get like $3.50. When I sell, if I try to sell my paperback version for $9.99, I might only be making $1.20 or something like that, or $1 off of it. So setting the prices a little bit higher is a different strategy. It's a different expectation because we've mostly in the indie author community, we've mostly trained ourselves to play by the ebook rules. And getting into the print book world, there's a lot more complications. There's a lot more factors involved. As a matter of fact, some of the print books I sell, I mean, I'm making $8 or more margin on the print book, which is way more than I'm even making on the ebook, even though I'm getting 70% on the ebook. And I know I'm overpricing, but I also know it's a product people want physical copies of. Again, I'm not trying to rip them off. I'm just trying to say, hey, guys got to eat here. Right.
Yeah. Guys got bills to pay. Right. Yeah.
I have a book habit to feed. I have to buy books. Come on. I need to feed that habit.
Yeah. And the other thing too, another expectation about pricing is that we have to price cheap in order to sell. I've actually found more the converse of that to be true. Whereas like I sell more, I mean, I don't sell more at $4.99, but I have higher quality readers. And by higher quality readers, I mean people who are right for my books and my books are right for them. So more my specific author, my readers, my readership are more likely to pick up the book. Because if they're paying more money for it, they're going to make sure it's something they're interested in reading instead of like, oh, it's only 99 cents. It's only a book, you know, whatever.
Exactly. They're already self-filtering. So they know, okay, I really want this. Therefore they're more likely to read it. Most people who download a free book do not read it. So the other thing too, is you get like huge downloads. Oh, I just had 10,000 people download the book one of my series. I guarantee you less than 1,000 of those people in the first 2 months even opened it. Yeah. They grabbed it, they threw it on their device, and they forgot about it. So the chances of them actually opening it are slim. But if they've had to make a decision saying, hey, this is a book that's $6.99 US, I want to make a decision that I'm going to read this book. It's not like, well, I'll just grab it because it's free. So they've already made that decision. They're more likely to read it as well.
Plus 70 cents more per copy per dollar in your price per reader. Hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've tested, I'm actually looking at bumping. I have a book club coming up January 1st of all days, New Year's. And
it's that's exciting.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm actually looking at bumping the prices of that series up to $5.99 again. That experiment before, and this is pre-pandemic when I did it last time. I mean, people are expecting to pay more for stuff now because of inflation post-pandemic, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to make more money as authors as well. So why not bump your books a buck or two? When I did it before, I didn't notice any drop in sales whatsoever. And I was making an extra 70 cents per book. So, hey, win-win. And then when sales started slowing down because I wasn't advertising as much, I dropped it back down to $4.99. Didn't really make a difference again. So, you know, if you're at $4.99, maybe try $5.99 on your ebooks. You know, give that a shot.
So your BookBub, is that going to be a 99 cent or a free?
It's a freebie.
It's a free. So again, they're getting the book for free. Most people aren't going to open it right away. But the people who do read it, if they get to the end of it really quickly, they know they already have a good thing. So what's $6.99 or $5.99?
Yep.
Right. I already got whatever, 6 hours, 8 hours of entertainment out of that. I mean, a slow reader could get a lot more hours of entertainment out of it.
I think the ebook or the audiobook of that one actually has an audiobook. So that's another benefit too. I think it's 7 hours.
7 hours. Yeah. So, I mean, that's 7 hours at a regular reading rate, but if you're a slow reader, that's going to be whatever. And if you're a really fast reader, like my wife can probably get through that book in 3 hours because she's just really, really fast. Whereas it would take me 12.
Yeah. Or a couple days for me, because that's about as much time as I have. But yeah, it's and that's something I'm reassessing right now and something other people might want to consider as well. Check your prices because, I mean, in the early days of the indie author community, and some of that advice is still around, like, you have to price cheap in order to move copies. You don't. And sometimes actually pricing higher, you get that perceived value kicking in, which is one of those marketing things. People like, oh, well, it's more expensive, and yet it's got these reviews on it, so people are buying it at this price. It must be okay, you know, at least. if not, this looks like a good book, and oh, wow, you know. It's a very subliminal cue. But it does work and it does happen and I've seen it and the data's out there.
Now, let's talk about one of the other expectations of managing the expectations is rapid release and not giving yourself a break and not stopping to, for example, we're getting close to, it's December 11th today. We're getting close to the holiday season and it's time potentially for the end of the year is taking a break, taking a breath, analyzing your business and making some decisions for what you want to do the next year. If that's what you do at the end of the year, maybe it's time to spend some time with family. I just saw an author yesterday announced on social media. All right, shut down my inbox says out of office for the rest of the month. I'm in my decompression mode. I need this time for myself. So I think the expectation is you don't have to work all the time. I think it's important to think about your mental health, to think about your physical health, and to give yourself an opportunity to enjoy the reap the benefit of the fact that, I mean, come on, oh my God, I looked outside, it's snowing. I'm going to go, after we finish this, I'm going to go shovel and get healthy and listen to an audiobook. But I think it's really important because I know that when I just keep going and going and going and going, my temper gets higher, and then somebody comes up and asks me a really easy, like a simple thing, like, oh, could you? It's like, no, I can't. It kind of builds up, and then the pressure just explodes, and that's not a good thing to do to yourself because I need my creative mind to be functioning somewhat.
Yes, as a very wise woman named Becca Syme once told me, because I'm a number one input, you cannot do nothing but output. You have to input, or eventually your well is going to run dry. And I'm like, I'm definitely one of those people. I ran my well so dry, I was actually digging it deeper. So what she said is basically, I have to fill it, spend a lot more time filling it again in order to get back to the same level where I was before. So that's the expectation. You are not a machine. You are a human being. You are a creative who needs to live your life, to step back and relax and rest and take time to refill the well. So don't expect that you can do it all or that you should do it all. That is, I think, probably one of the biggest ones that we see is you see a lot of these authors who have built their success on publishing a lot, being very prolific. And not everybody can do that. In fact, most of us, I would bet probably the majority of writers cannot sustain that pace.
Unless it's a pace that you're already comfortable with. I mean, I think there are authors who are comfortable with a pace that's really steady, and that's fine. And they like it, and it's not killing them.
Yes.
For myself, I can do that for a short time period where I have lots of projects like crammed into a small space, but then I need to give myself a breather. So I know, but then they're all different projects, right? So I have this series is not going to have more than one a year. I'm sorry, but that's what my readers are used to. And I don't want to get them all excited and start getting them used to sooner because I can't output that way. Cause I do usually about 4 books a year, but they're all in different genres and stuff like that.
Yeah. See, I'm learning. One of the things I've learned about myself is I have Phoenix tendency. So I burn really, really hot and I get a ton of stuff done. And then I need to take at least probably 2 or 3 times that time period to recover from it. Right. And it works. You know, now that I'm learning that I work that way, I can actually work with it. And like, if I'm in that hot burning period, it's like, okay, I got to ride this until it's done. And then I can sit back without guilt and say, okay, now it's resting period. It's the fallow time of the season. You know? So, yeah.
I'm just going to pop up some comments. So Lori says, I have to change genres a lot. It will take longer to get those read-throughs, but it keeps me sane. So that works for you as well, Lori. So thanks for sharing that. And then Kristen says, the more you know yourself and your body, the easier it is to set realistic expectations for yourself. Yes. So it is good to take the time to, to listen to your body and your emotions and your feelings. And Literary Llama says, I think I rest too much. We'd laugh. Well, so long as you're feeling good. I mean, come on, it's okay to feel good. Don't beat yourself up.
That's a point too. I mean, there is a point where there is too much rest. I have found that. Like, I cannot, I get to a point where if I haven't accomplished something or I haven't, if I don't feel productive, I start getting really anxious and angry. And like yesterday, I snapped at my poor husband because I have all these covers that I have to get done for clients and I haven't had much of a chance this week to do it. And I could feel myself doing this, you know, I'm like, I'm sorry, I have to work. I can't do this. I got to work. And my husband's like, I'm like, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
I need to work. And so I did. And I got a couple covers done last night and a couple of logos and it felt so much
better. And now he can walk into the room and you don't bite his head off. So that's
good. Exactly.
You sounds like Rhiannon might have a similar thing saying, Rhiannon says, I have to be doing all the things or I don't feel right. It messes me up. So sometimes, I mean, I remember the other day I was thinking about something for one of my book projects. I wrote 3 in the morning and I got up to go to the washroom and I went back to bed and I couldn't fall asleep because I kept thinking about it. So I just got up, wrote it down, and then I was able to sleep.
Yeah.
It would have messed me up laying there thinking about it for another 3 hours or 2.5 hours. I just got up, spent the 15, 20 minutes writing it down, getting it out of my system, and then I could rest.
Angela says, if you need something to do, Rhiannon Fudge. Sounds like help. So in case anybody's wondering, Rhiannon does run, she does some author PA services. So if you need some help, she's getting pretty well stocked, but she is doing some like author fulfillment type stuff and some accountability. Maybe go hit her up because she is freaking awesome.
Yes.
Just saying.
And she's been a guest on a previous episode of the podcast. So you can learn a little bit more about how Rhiannon, the awesomeness that Rhiannon is.
Yes. And she does do all the things in some days. And I know people look at me and do this, like, how do you do all the things that you do? And to me, it doesn't feel like it's that much. And it's like, Rhiannon's the same way. She does a ton of stuff. And I'm going, how do you do all this stuff?
Yeah.
But And it's very much the case of what Becca Syme has been trying to convince the author community of for a long time now, is that there is no one size fits all. You know, we're all different and we all have to kind of wade through all of the things and all of the advice out there to see what fits us individually.
Yeah. That's a great expectation. You hear advice, it seems like it works for this person. It may not fit for you. You need to be Goldilocks here. You need to try this porridge and that porridge and the other porridge. You need to sit in this chair and that chair, right? Yes. We all need to Goldilocks our lives.
Yeah. Oh, and Rhiannon's also training PAs. So if you're interested in becoming a PA, if you're one of us that needs multiple things going on and you think that's something you might be interested in, go check it out.
Awesome.
Grounded Chaos is the name of that, in case anybody's curious.
Awesome. Well, Susie, I want to thank everyone for participating, for sharing some thoughts and some ideas here. And Susie, thank you for helping me to manage my expectations.
Likewise. So I think this is kind of starting out a little bit for the next few weeks on the Y Stream. We're going to be focusing more on like sustainability, setting goals, or if goals is a scary word, you know, like figuring out what your dreams for your career are and then working toward that. Because it's that time of the year, you know, New Year's is right around the corner. I know that's what I'm doing right now. And I've had to take a few hard looks at some things and I'm cutting some areas that I don't necessarily want to cut, but that I need to. And so I can actually focus on the stuff that is the most important to me. And so we're going to be doing a lot of that. So we'll see you guys next week.
All right. As always, check out wideforthewind.com. You can get to the circle group. You can get to the Facebook group. And don't forget to like and comment. Thank you guys for commenting. And subscribe. Subscribe to the channel so we can continue to grow this awesome channel. Thank you so much. And thanks, everyone, for watching.
Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to the Wide for the Win podcast. For links to our Facebook and Circle groups and other helpful Wide publishing resources, go to wideforthewin.com. The music for this podcast, Sax and Rock and Roll, was written and performed by Kevin MacLeod and was licensed at incompetech.com.